The past remains the past. We can learn from it, but we cannot change it.
Welcome to 2C1C, a Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5.
Who that was?
That was Bran, and thank God he's not in the show next season.
Yeah, actually, I misread. It wasn't actually Bran. It was in a Bran chapter. It was, Lord Brynden.
Thank God he's dead.
Actually, he's not.
I think he's still alive.
Right?
Blackfish.
If you can call that alive.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I don't think the Blackfish was in any chapters with Bran. I think that's Brynden Rivers.
Nope.
Not Brynden Tully.
We don't
Thank God he's dead.
I know exactly who Brynden Rivers is. He's watching all right. You all with a thousand eyes.
It's a bastard, and Winterfell's dead.
So, we ain't got time for this. Hi, I'm Aaron Glazer.
I'm Will, also known as Kenan.
Konnichiwa, bitches! Ow, that one hurt.
Why aren't you at the in-laws?
Wow. Kyle even hurt himself with that one. I think that might be a sign... you've reached your pinnacle.
No.
It may be time to retire it.
Like all great stories, even if we have climax, there is still the falling action and the conclusion.
The falling action is usually just me falling asleep, but hey, whatever.
You know, I think I could do without thinking about Kyle climaxing.
It's all I think about.
God damn it.
Well, you know what else climaxed?
We need Daryl back so, like, the penis jokes aren't about me. If for no other reason that the dick jokes go where they belong.
In fairness, they're very small penis jokes now.
Minuscule, you might say.
Jesus.
And limp, too. They always fall so, like, limp.
Well, it's going to be one of those
hard
episodes.
Hitting, like they are with Daryl. Goes, you know, we did just have something climax, and that would be the Conquest and Defiance cycle. It just wrapped up.
That was so rough. You know what just climaxed?
Oh, it was supposed
I don't like to
think
how my cycle's getting off the six pack came out. I guess they do.
No, the cycle climaxed with
Wheels Within Wheels.
When Harrenhal came out.
Yeah, Harrenhal and
No, that's
Danny.
The, like, double barrel you weren't expecting.
Yeah, right.
That's the aftershock.
Danny Harrenhal.
You're like, whoa! Yeah. Okay. So, Conquest and Defiance just wrapped up. Great cycle.
And we just reviewed the chapter pack, but I was kind of thinking we might go ahead and chat a little bit about the cycle as a whole here. We had a listener question a while back. It was actually back in July now, from a William Anderson, who was suggesting kind of a segment to us talking about the prized cards and their power level, you know, and whether that was appropriate on like a card-to-card basis and whatnot. So we thought it'd be best to kind of sit on that until the cycle had wrapped. So we're going to work that into our cycle discussion here. Might be a little free form, but I definitely have some general notes that I want to hit on as we talk about what Conquest and Defiance did for the world of Game of Thrones.
What's our first topic?
I was going to say, let's start at the top. so to speak, the top cards. And, you know, I kind of jotted down some at random, and I think Aaron even kind of more formalized his into an actual top 10 list. So how about Aaron kind of lays that top 10 list on it? Kyle and I can dissect it and rip it to shreds and, you know, see where that goes.
So because I know everyone's not as nuts as we are, when I say what the card is, I don't have the exact text of every card memorized. But I mean, we have a basic idea of what the card does when I say it.
That sounds
so
good.
So my number 10 card is Flame and Shadow. It is a Baratheon-only event, Kneel to Influence, Prize 2. To take control of a non-army character without attachments until the end of the challenge phase.
Love that shit. Do you know what's best is when you fucking just take the Hand of the King title in melee, no one gives a fuck. I love it.
It's great in so many different builds. Like, Ara actually has good builds, at least in part, because of Flame and Shadow.
There's just so many, like, in the cycle with the prize stuff, there's so many potent characters out there right now, just some all-star, like, board position, and getting those rock stars out there so key right now, and just being able to be like, you know what, I'm going to turn it on you. Like, Sandy did the same thing with Mel's favor at Gen Con. He's like, whatever the best shit you can lay out is, and it's probably going to kick some ass, I'm going to take you, and I'm just going to, like, ram it up your ass for a round. And that's fucking effective, especially for an event.
Well, and it means you can't do a military challenge at that point, too, so it weakens you even further. Because if you military challenge, they're just going to kill your dude.
Totally.
It's great with Aftermath to get rid of him. It's great with Harrenhal to just kill him. All around, fantastic, fantastic event.
Yeah. Ready for number? I'm actually I'm pretty down with that being on the list somewhere. It's a huge boon for Bera. I'm not 100% sold that I like them getting all these really strong, just like point and click, take control effects. But I definitely have to acknowledge it's a great card.
Well, every other house has something that's point and click control-y except Bera, and that's, I guess, part of what was holding them back.
Yeah,
house has something
probably
just semi-broken.
So. I just don't like take control as a theme that should get pushed very far because of its kind of inherent two-for-one nature. I mean, this and Mel's favor are both temporary effects, but it's not too hard to find a way to ditch that character with Harrenhal or
Aftermath.
Potentially Aftermath. No, I was going to say, what's that bear event that kills somebody to put someone else back into play?
Oh,
Glamour,
I know.
Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't absolutely love it. I don't think it breaks anything because being an event, it's fairly cancelable. We just got all this new cancel. And with Wheels Within Wheels, which, spoiler alert, shows up on the list, with Wheels Within Wheels, everyone's going to be running a lot of cancel. And it's not like Bera is ahead of the pack. As frustrating as it is, it's not like it's winning an awful lot. At least yet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's hard to recur. Events aren't easy to recur, especially when they're not any phase. Alright, so, number 9 is Longship Iron Victory. That would obviously be the newer one. It's a prize 2 location with the text, more or less, challenge phase. Kneel and discard it to kill a participating character. It's created entirely new deck archetypes. The only reason it's not higher is because outside of House of Dreams decks, it doesn't see an awful lot of play. But it's super recurrable in those House of Dreams decks with things like Wex Pike and the little 3-for-2 Warcrest name.
Warcrest.
Yep.
Return to Warship to play.
First Mate.
First Mate. Yeah, with First Mate, it's super recurrable, and that one card is created an archetype. This card could easily be like 4 spots higher, but it is still called Longship Iron Victory, which I still hold against it.
Yeah, I really was kind of thinking that myself as far as spots higher. I was thinking I would probably rate it somewhere more in the middle, like 5 or 6, because it has really pushed that. Like, that deck came on, obviously because LIV2 existed, but it really pushed to the forefront of the kind of Thrones meta consciousness for quite a while during this cycle. So
a lot of the best stuff in this cycle is point and click. and this is just more like insanely powerful point and click.
Yeah, it doesn't get much more direct than that.
I don't know, I agree. I mean, you know, everything that needs to be said has been said. It's best, its use is a little narrow. You see it mainly out of the HOD build. And especially because if you're not HOD doing it, you're much more likely to run the other one. But in that, it's super cool. And that early ability, early game to tilt the board in your favor, especially early on prize doesn't matter as much. It's awesome.
Alright, number 8 on the list is the Blackwood Elite. They're the 3/6 Stark Army that is deadly, renowned, and no attachments. But if you lose military claim, they must be chosen, and they're prized too. I just feel
beast.
Like... they're a beast. They're a giant beat stick that goes in, like, every deck.
But you got renown and deadly, so you're encouraging unimposed and the renown. A lot of these, like, aggro-y decks, especially when I've been playing Stark, have kind of ached for a closer, and I struggle to find consistent ones, and that guy is definitely going in. They're super solid. That drawback is... should be, if you're playing right and aware of it, negligible at worst.
I mean, at worst, it's power you're going to get back. Because they're going to have to overcommit to win with that thing on the board, so it'd be a miracle if they can then properly defend power and military themselves.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, probably so. I acknowledge he's extremely efficient. I guess he just didn't wow me beyond, you know, the plain numbers there, because he's just a beat stick. But
he's a renowned deadly beat stick.
Yeah.
So he's a 2-power per turn usually beat stick. Or, you know, 4 in a siege deck.
I acknowledge he's looking pretty solid. There's definitely something to be said for efficiency, so you know, I'm not too surprised to see him on a list.
Alright. Next up, number 7, is Sir Edmure Tully. Start character, free cost, 3 strength, military power icons, Warcrest, deadly, and any phase, choose a card in your dead or discard pile, choose a card in any player's dead or discard pile, and shuffle it back into that player's deck.
Interesting. And he's in the 7th place, you said?
He is.
You know, he probably would not have made my list. He's a...
Wow, injured. Will!
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, I like him.
I didn't know you were that dumb.
He doesn't play Stark.
I don't play much Stark. But, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in this set, and just picking literally the top 10? I don't know. A lot of good stuff in this
set. It's all positive, and the any phase on him is bananas. Like, oh, they killed off my Lewin or my Mira. I'm just going to trigger his ability, shuffle it back in, and play it again. And just they get so pissed off, like, oh, they're dead, dumbass. And I'm like,
I mean,
no, they're not.
Assuming you get the character back.
Well, you don't... Again, it allows you to run duplicates of that character. But more than that, it allows you to get your no quarters back. It allows you in a Dark Wings, Dark Words deck to get your key events back time and again. I used Winter is Coming 3 times in 1 game with him.
Dark Wings, Dark Words deck?
Yeah. Just kept shuffling it back in and was drawing so much, I just kept seeing it. Cleaned house. There's he's a knight, so he's good in a knight's deck. He's good in no agenda for the aforementioned Mira stuff, especially because you should have enough stuff, different ways to search her out, since it's a no agenda deck.
Yeah, I mean, he's a
deadly.
Really solid, like, one of in any deck that can play him.
2 of in Dark Wings.
Yeah, I could see that. But just not quite in the top 10 for me. Honorable mention, probably.
Fair enough.
He's wonderful. Big fan. And he's one of those cards that performs better in the game situation than you necessarily get the impression of when reading him, for sure. And you still get a great impression just reading him. It's all positive.
Well, remember how we all thought Blessed by the Maiden was kind of whatever? He's got basically the same trigger as Blessed by the Maiden. Oh, also hilarious, when you see a Barra player release a Mel Scheme, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to shuffle back into your character now. They do not like that.
Balls.
Yeah, he does have some offensive effort.
And he can do it pre-plot.
Yep.
You can get 2 out of it. You know it's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic card.
But not top 10. Listen to Will. He knows what he's talking about.
Oh, Sorry, football.
I set the dog on you a little bit.
Six on the list is Viserys Targaryen. One cost, one strength, intrigue, power icons, king. No crest, prized one only. And he is kneel him to discard an attachment from play. Any phase two, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the single biggest reason that, like, unique attachments aren't seeing a bunch of play right now. Because at least a couple of those warden-type attachments are very good, and you're not seeing them everywhere, at least partially because Viserys is so omnipresent, at least one of in every Targ deck.
He's just close enough to the Tim Link that he scares you all the time, but just far enough away that he's not going to get his ass stripped in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I could see that. Mainly because he's in one particular house, and in that house is established flavor.
And he's that house only, which, thank goodness,
because
I would totally
recommend
him.
You can't just pull him off your agenda at will. You have to actually get lucky enough to draw or search him.
Also, he's pretty fantastic at just turning off other kings. Like, turning off Tommen and Super Stannis? Fantastic. Yeah.
There's a lot to love in that one-drop package there.
He's one of in just every single Targ deck, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
All right, number five. This is the truly elite cards. The top five are the truly, like, each of these cards is in some way, shape, or form shape the meta. First is the Aftermath.
Okay, yep.
3-7-1 plot. Neutral, obviously, is a plot. Prized one. And at the end of the marshalling phase, choose three characters, discard the rest, cannot be saved.
Yeah.
Have you guys...
Power level-wise, it's up there. Go ahead.
Have you tried it with Targ Jumper yet?
Not with a straight Targ. The first build of my Conquest deck was using some Ambush stuff to kind of play around with that. Of course, along with the little ambassador guy that wouldn't get discarded by it, which wasn't a great plan like that. But I'm sure an actual nice Hollow Hill Jumper deck would love it.
I fully expect Bruno to show up with it at Worlds and just rock us all with long lances.
Yeah.
I mean, look at... To see its effect, I didn't see shit for Dothraki at Gen Con. I mean, that deck was prolific and strong and popular prior to the Aftermath, and now you can't see a fucking horde anywhere.
It does a fair job. Well, depending on how much Shadows Stark is running, it does a fair job of screwing over Stark. It benefits anyone who has Shadows and anyone who can stand stuff, multiple uses. Yeah. You go first, you're up 3-2 immediately, basically. They can't defend much. It's phenomenal. It's so powerful.
I mean, this is a pseudo-reprint of a CCG card, the Winter Storm. And, I mean, that card was all over the place as, like, the reset du jour when it was out. And so seeing this, I was like, okay, like, we're just bringing that back, and it's just as effective. It's a... Putting the choke point post-marshalling does so much for the dynamic of how that reset works. Big control decks love it because it keeps character count down. Aggro decks may love it because your thought being, my three dudes are going to be better than your three dudes. I mean, so many different builds appreciate and can find ways to exploit this plot. So on strength and versatility alone, I think it's a great add on this list.
Outside of absolutely everything but Greyjoy, I can think of a really easy use for it. Like in Lannister, you kneel shit. In Barra, you steal and discard, and what you discard, you Mel Scheme back. Targ jumps. Stark, no quarter. And then they're down 3-1. And then Martell, Gaston Grey. Like, everyone but Greyjoy has a fantastically easy use for this.
Yeah. Well, and don't forget a few of those houses also play pretty well with Shadows, which helps get around it as well.
That's true. Great card. Alright, next up in the 4 spot is Harrenhal. If you've been living in a cave and don't know what Harrenhal does, 2 cost, unique location, prize 2. As a cancel, you can kill one of your characters to put a goal token on it and cancel any triggered effect. With the added bonus of you being able to add as many gold as you want to make Valar stick. Because of your timing issues.
I would have been tempted to put it a couple spots higher, honestly.
And you can wipe someone else's board. The more I play with it, the more balanced it feels. It is a great tool in a great player's arsenal, but I mean, killing off dudes all the time, you're seeing a lot of people. It just kind of keeps. It does what I think Nate tried to do with this cycle. That was bring characters and board position back to the focus of the game. And if you're killing dudes off for effects, now you don't have as many dudes to challenge with. If they're running things that hit your character count, a lot of murder, a lot of burn, things like that, you're just flat out the dudes to do it. I think it has brought the focus back to where we want it, but the card feels much more balanced having played with it. Now, in Melee, yes, it gets stupid and ridiculous, but I think if you focus on Joust, which we all are, I think the card at 4, it is powerful, it is present. I don't think it needs restricted, but it feels like a very good, well-rounded card.
I feel like because of this card, we should be taking things off the restricted list. Like, Bleeds and Feasts don't necessarily need to be there anymore, because this is such a heavy, prominent cancel. But it only feels so powerful because so much heavy control is restricted. If you get rid of all that heavy control, it's at that point, just a very good, very powerful effect. It's a little overpowered right now. It's easy to bring into balance. But I really, my favorite thing about it, and in the build-up to Gen Con, we called it the good player tax. Because a bad player that plays Harrenhal, you beat. You just roll them because they don't know what to cancel, what to do. And good players, like, dominate you if they know what they're doing with Harrenhal.
Real skill tester.
Oh, yeah. I tend not to run decks that run a lot of Harrenhal, so I played against it a lot more than I played with it. But my favorite thing about it is, if you're going to go 2-0-0 for your plot, you deserve a board wipe. And I like that Harrenhal makes us have a real board wipe.
Yes. I do like that. Like you said, it's a skill card. It scales with your player ability, for sure. I think it makes you want to run cities again. I mean, I think I won at least one game at Gen Con just by getting the 13 and city besieging and just blowing it up.
Sandy won a game like that at Gen Con with Rallycry, I think.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's a solid play.
Just grab newly made lords, play Greyjoy Black Sails, and go grab your newly made lords. There's answers.
Mm-hmm. And passives. It brings passives back to a appeal. Stuff that may not be a better effect, but just is more, you know, you don't have to worry about it. This is going to happen. It's nice.
Yep. Absolutely. Number 3, and number 3 and number 4 could have flip-flopped. They did a few times, but ultimately she's showing up in too many houses not to be number 3. Daenerys Targaryen, 3 cost, 4 strength, Targaryen character, Lady Queen. Prize 2, response, when you declare a challenge, choose an opponent's character to die if she wins that challenge. She's a meta shaper.
And you have to have her as an attacker.
Right,
correct?
Right. As long as she's participating. But there's now 2 ways at least to get her into 2 challenges per phase. Or
yep. I wanted Targ to get a card like this, just to give Targ a different kind of feel. But now that she's getting the Asha treat, like, I feel like that's the line for a character being restricted is when Lannister doesn't bat an eye playing her out of house. When she starts getting the Asha treatment, it's probably time to go on a restricted list.
I'm seeing her in Lannister. I'm seeing her in Greyjoy for some reason. I'm seeing her in Martell constantly, and I'm seeing her in Targ. Just, I don't want her restricted. I think Targ could use the boost. Targ doesn't have any deck that's broken with her. She's very well balanced for them. Just do what you've done with all the other cards. And they should probably do this with Asha also. Errata her to House X only. Make her House Targ. Yeah. Make Arya House Greyjoy. Problem solved. So, she's fantastic with Aftermath because she kills stuff. Like, they have 3 cards left. You get to kill one for a military, kill one for Dany, because they can kill something to cancel her, but she's trying to kill something anyway. Yeah. She's ridiculous.
That kill being on non-military is huge.
She's phenomenal for Power Behind the Throne with the many ways Targ now has to keep her standing. Sorry, Heir to the Iron Throne with the many ways Targ has to keep her standing so she can get two or three challenges in. She's phenomenal with Power Behind the Throne because a Game of Thrones is a plot that exists in this game. It gives her two intrigue and one power to kill things. She's a monster. And Daenerys Targaryen should be a monster.
She is very appropriate. This is probably the most appropriate, prized effect kind of card. I mean, this is what Dany is. This is a prized thing. I mean, the design of it is awesome. She is shock and awe all day.
My biggest problem with Mira is that her name is Mira Reed. Like, if Mira Reed were Arya Stark or Bran Stark, I would have so much less problem with her. Like, if...
Especially Arya.
More main.
Yeah, if you're going to have a ridiculously powerful card like that, make it Daenerys Targaryen. Make it Arya Stark.
Make it Tywin Lannister.
Exactly. If you're going...
In fact, that exact ability, I think, would have made for a great Tywin ability as well.
Tywin needs military, though.
Yeah. It's not brash enough for a Tywin.
I said the ability. It doesn't have to be the icon.
That's true. I can see it. At that point, I'm playing it out of Martell. But, sure. Imagine that on Two of the Spears turn. Oof.
Indeed.
Could still be done.
Alright. Number two card. No one even remembers this cycle anymore. It is Crossing the Mummers Forward. 3-1-1 plot, neutral. Reveal a card and add it to hand for each river you have in your used plot pile. So, yeah. stupid card advantage.
Is that with it as restricted, or is that just in general?
It's as restricted, but it's number two no matter what. Like, restricted or not, it's number two, just because it's not topping number one.
Yeah.
But, like, it's still used in a crap ton of decks. It just won the Australian Nationals, right? It's in a bunch of different Darkwing Stark Words decks, including the third place one at Gen Con. It's in several different Stark No Agenda decks. It's still seen playing Greyjoy. It's still seen play in the DC version of Quentin. It's horribly powerful.
And you're right, when you first sent me a little bit of notes on your top 10, I had completely forgotten that Crossing was in this set. So it feels like it's been forever now since it came out.
Oh, it was an earlier pack, right? Number two, number three?
Two, I want to...
Holy shit. But it just scored with 30 seconds left. Sorry, yeah, I think it was pack one, actually. Pretty sure it was pack one. I'll check in 2 seconds. I kept the page open. It awesome. Is the very first set of the cycle.
There we go.
Spoils of War. So, it's been out for a while. We've seen what it can do.
I really like it on the restricted list. I think it's a good restricted choice. It's like, you need draw, you're gonna, like, blind, no thinking draw, you're gonna have to give up that powerful card slot for it. I think it's what you want in a restricted card. If the point is to kind of balance the game a little bit and make deck building decisions a little harder, it does that where it net lives. Not that we should ever design cards with the thought of this will be great on the restricted list, but...
But here we are.
But here we are.
Alright, so do we all know what the number one card is? Because we should.
We do?
I'm dying to know.
Roin Pullman.
Wheels. Wheels within wheels. Prize 2, Lannister event, any phase. Kneel a unique Lannister character with prize 2, sorry. Kneel a unique Lannister character to choose and reveal a new plot card. I hate this card. I really hate this card. I'm going to say it every week until this card goes away forever. I hate this card.
I don't know if it needs to go away forever. I mean, we've talked before about possible solutions.
Yeah, well, I rot it into oblivion, so it's not a good card anymore.
But... Like it is right now, yeah, it's pretty crazy good.
Hello?
Hello.
That was weird.
What?
No.
There are two instances of Kyle now, it looks like, and one of them has video on again.
So, Kyle, what do you think of Wheels Within Wheels?
It belongs on this list. It's a little too vulnerable for me to go at number one. It's such a boom or bust card. I mean, the things you can do, and the more creative and the better the player, the more neat shit you're going to see pop up. And as we get newer plots, it's going to get more and more potent. But it is vulnerable to a lot of different cancel. That's kind of one of the reasons I love Heron Hall is worst-case scenario. It can protect itself. But, I mean, it's really, really good and can do amazing things. I just don't know if number one is where it goes for me. Like, if you told me at the beginning of the set, before playing with any of these cards to rank them, and I, like, known them all, I would have said Wheels and Wheels is number one. But it's a little tough to put it there now, having played with it, because everyone does have it on their mind, especially right now, because everyone does have it on their minds, and everyone is packing answers.
Yeah, I do have to agree with that. Like, Paper Shield is all over the place down here again. I think I've gotten to use Wheels once that it wasn't canceled.
I've used it fairly more than that. It's, like, I think the real strength of Wheels Within Wheels is you just build a really, really strong Lannister deck. You build a Power Behind the Throne with great plots and great characters, Bunch of Neil. Or you build a No Agenda the same way. Or you build a Knights deck the same way. And you just have this really powerful deck. You add a few unique characters, you throw Wheels Within Wheels, and unless the meta specifically prepares for it, you auto-win some matchups. Well, you auto-win a lot of matchups, often.
I mean, Lannister was all over the place and very powerful at Gen Con, and I don't see how giving them Wheels would change that popularity.
I just don't see anything fun about this card. It allows a bunch of way too powerful combos that the game isn't built for. That then again, if you don't prepare for it, previously the most powerful effect in the game is probably Burning in the Sand, right? The most powerful event. But like,
yeah, I mean, you can make arguments about a bunch, hatchlings, but it's in
but
the top.
None of them like just by like if you don't prepare for one and you run it. And your opponent sees it, you don't just auto-lose the same way you do with Wheels Within Wheels. Like, I don't have to prepare for Burning on the Sand. If you see Burning on the Sand, it might stop me, it might even win you the game, but there's no guarantee of that. If you see Wheels Within Wheels at the right time with the right combination, plot one or two, the game is over. Or effectively over.
Yeah, the aggregate effect of it on the board, you know, with your likely plays, be it Fear of Winter, Blockade, and all sorts of other stuff.
It's
probably much larger, right? Well, not just board, I guess, also hands. But anyway, is probably much larger than a single Burning on the Sand in comparison.
Or a single No Quarter, or a single Name It.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Oh well, frustration. Let's move on. Okay. That's my top 10. What do you guys have?
Well, I think that pretty well covers my cards there, with maybe a nod at a couple others, the Westerlands and Theon. I'm not quite sure if I'd put Theon in my top, but I think I would slip the Westerlands in near the bottom, maybe the 9 or 10 slot for me.
Kick out Edmure.
You know, it just,
to kick out Edmure.
Yeah, probably. Just because it brings such a strong control ability to a house that has not had practical ways to deal with locations in the past. That's been kind of their weakness. And sure, this doesn't answer all of them, but it does start filling in a hole that they didn't have any answers for before.
Theon's only as good as Burn is bad. Like, the second Burn is at all prominent, Theon becomes a lot more trouble than he's worth.
Yeah, that was a great feeling to flame kiss the heck out of him when Mark was playing him a bunch.
Is Kyle doing dishes again?
No, I was eating a meatball.
Nice, enjoy your meatball.
Just one meatball. Right.
It was our last meatball.
I've got a couple more for honorable mention. Aegon Targaryen is a fantastic effect that just doesn't have the right build yet.
Yeah.
Zolo isn't top 10, but he goes in way too many decks to just not at least be mentioned. Desert Raider goes in every Martell deck. And Great Wick is great in the right deck, but probably not for every deck.
I think I would throw at least one copy in every Greyjoy deck.
Greyjoy is really tight for space sometimes.
Yeah. The specialized guys, I think, see a ton of play and make you rethink certain decisions when building.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that might actually be a segue kind of from this into my next two, which was going to be what in this set changed the meta or deck building the most. And I think those specialized guys definitely have had some impact.
It's three real things. It's prized, allowing for more out of house. Prized. Conquest, allowing for more out of house. Prized as a whole, how much do you put in, how much do you not? And then Rivers giving everyone access to easy draw, so card advantage is never an excuse anymore.
Those are definitely up there. I've got a couple more I would also throw out. I would definitely say Viserys. I feel like we had the Tin Link for a while that just hit attachments so hard for so long that it really took a while for them to start recovering after people quit playing the Tin Link. And it was just kind of starting to make that recovery, and then suddenly we're slammed with Viserys, and now, you know, there's not any point in playing anything that isn't Null's favor. Okay, maybe you see a Widow's Wail or something here and there, but, you know, it's still in that category of attachments being nigh unplayable in people's opinion, so I think that was a pretty big effect on the meta again.
I don't know. I think that's a little overreacting. I mean, I see some attachments, what I would call a healthy number of.
There's something preventing a lot of the control effects, and like negative attachments, positive attachments won't see much play because of Viserys. Negative attachments are less of a problem because they tend to have a quick effect that you're happy to get. But, I don't know, Viserys has had, Harrenhal's had a huge effect on hard control.
Yeah, Harrenhal was the other one that I would say has had a pretty big effect on the meta.
So, what do you think is the single biggest effect?
The single biggest out of this... that is a tough call. Especially if we're mixing prized as a whole in with single cards. If we're doing that, I would probably, I think, have to go with prized as a whole. But if we keep it with single cards... Probably Rivers. They really forced a change in the meta for a long time, with Conquest a close second. And of course, now that we've had that restriction, Conquest may trump Rivers in long-lasting, subtle differences there.
It does become awfully close. So what do we think about the effects? Do we like all these effects? Do we not like all these effects? Are they healthy for the meta? I mean, we already talked about Harrenhal and Wheels and such.
I think Prize is good because it allows for more card design options. You can play with effects that otherwise it'd be very difficult to cost. It's more creativity while still being a very simple mechanic to understand. So I like what the... I like what it's done for the card pool.
That was prize specifically?
Yeah. The Rivers thing I like having, because there are a lot of decks now that become viable with some draw. There are a lot of deck types that did not even begin to exist beforehand that now do. And I like it being restricted. I like that being a conscious choice you have to make. So, you know, overall, I think this cycle has done more good than harm, for sure.
It's been a little power creepy here and there. I feel like there's... Like, we had a couple of fairly balanced cycles where there were a lot of even cards, like middle-of-the-road cards, and this card had a lot of... This cycle had a lot of very cards and a lot of, like, really phenomenal cards. Like, really shaped the meta, amazingly good cards showed up in this.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at that last chapter pack we rated. I didn't sit down and actually calculate it, but our average rating for that pack would have been, what?
BB plus, yeah, in that range.
B minus, maybe?
Yeah, what's that? BB plus in that range.
Yeah, I mean, and that's pretty good to average out for a pack, and it feels to me like the packs in general were close to that level.
All right. So how about Pride specifically, Will? What do you think?
You know, I think it was overall a fun idea for the meta. It definitely speeds things up. Maybe not a whole lot, but it's been noticeable. I'm not sure if it's been a full turn in most games, maybe half a turn. Hard for me to really say since I wasn't really tracking that stat, just getting a general feel of it. Can be a little awkward in Melee, but I definitely saw it played at Gen Con. I thought maybe it would just kind of be a Joust-only thing, but that definitely did not turn out to be the case. So I like that it turned out to be more flexible than I expected it to be. But it, you know, it can be a little bit of a trap too. I definitely learned that when I lost a couple games to Valor at Worlds. So, you know, there's some actual teeth to that drawback.
I think it's absolutely brilliant from a design standpoint. I think it's a great idea. But I feel like this cycle was also a learning experience for how to make it effective with it with different cards. Like, there are cards that should have been prized that weren't. And then there are cards that were like, ugh, I wouldn't play this if it wasn't prized, let alone now. Like that 3-for-3 ally from Martell? Kneel to cancel triggered effect that was prized.
You know, it's actually...
Sorry to cancel response.
The Loyalist?
Yeah.
I was actually thinking we might zoom in on that for a little bit as well. Just as far as, you know, were there cards that it really felt worthwhile on? Were there cards that it just doesn't make a lick of sense? That kind of thing?
Well, okay. It makes sense on most of the cards.
Or were the amounts just wrong?
I feel like the amounts were off. Like, you murdered her children at prize 2 is a little much, as a quick example. Like, prize 1, I think, would have been fine. It's a discard effect. Not, you know, it doesn't need all that. Locked in a Cell at prize 2 and 3 influence is a bit much. While Harrenhal at prize 3 is still totally fine. Dany at prize 3 would still see a lot of play. Did the new Robert really need prize 2? Would prized 1 have fit? Things like that.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting because I called up, of course, all the prize cards to just glance at them while we were talking about this. And just looking at the first few of them, let's take a Targ example, or three Targ examples here. I see Aegon the Targaryen, Black Dragon Egg, and Black Fire, the sword. All three are unique, which I think is totally awesome and worthwhile. Aegon's at prize 1 seems reasonable. It still gets the idea across. But on the flip side, while it's super like Nedley for the Black Dragon Egg to be prized, the effect, especially at limited to 1 per deck, not great. Not really thinking that it justifies prized from an actual mechanical standpoint.
Desert Raider and Summer Sea Scout and cards like that mean that it can't be a Nedley thing at all.
Yeah, or even like the specialized guys, like the Ashmark Counselor and such. Like, it feels to me like it would have to be a really specific, I guess I could say, non-unique character or location to really justify prize. But we've got it smattered all over the place, I think, for a mechanical thing, which really dilutes it. And then you have stuff like Blackfire that... You know, well, I guess it's pretty much in the same boat as the Dragon Egg. It just makes sense, I guess, from a Nedley standpoint, but isn't needed mechanically, where it hurts.
Sure, but I wouldn't play either of those two cards if they weren't prized. Like, and Aegon has to be prized 1 because of his strength point, right? Like, otherwise he's basically unplayable, so he's priced more or less pretty much right as a prize. But the other two... If they weren't prized, I'd be like, ugh, no thank you, for 99% of the decks that exist.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is it's kind of all over the place in this set. You've got the events that you mentioned. We've got Aegon, which I do think happens to be pretty much spot on where he needs to be. We've got the prized attachments that, frankly, I'm not even sure that... Not even sure. I feel pretty reasonable that... The prized title attachments.
Oh, I think four of them are. I'm in love with four of them at this point.
I mean, I've seen the Lanny one see a little bit of play. I haven't seen much
of it. The Lanny one's great. The cancel one works a lot better than you think, because Greyjoy is going to play some prize stuff. It becomes a floating cancel, basically, anytime you get your LIV2 back, or you play Theon, or multiple other things, Wexpike. That floating cancel is huge, especially with opponents knowing it's there.
Yeah, for the turn you play it. I mean, if you really are set on looping that LIV, then you can trigger it turn after turn. But otherwise, they really don't have a lot of high density.
See, but it doesn't have to be density. Think of it this way. You're paying, like, one for it. One or two. I don't remember exactly. Do you have that up? King of the Isles is cost one. Ready? It's cost one, prize three. Unless your opponent is running, very specifically, unless your opponent is running that Viserys, that's going to be one cost for one cancel. You basically kneel a character for one cancel
that turn. You have to have
you don't have to keep up playing it. Worst case, you paid one gold for one cancel. It sits on your house card for the rest of the game.
For one possible cancel. Your opponent still has to actually do something that is worth canceling.
Most rounds in Game of Thrones, someone wants to trigger an effect. I mean, and...
Probably. But, I mean, it's in the same boat as, say, Harrenhal, as far as skill in knowing what to cancel.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing. Like, know what to cancel. They're probably... Generally speaking, if you've got this effect out, they're not going to trigger an effect. They're going to let that cancel go to no use. But you functionally just stop them for a turn.
Yeah, unless they can bait you out.
Which is why it's a good player. But that's fairly awesome. The Lannister one shuts down Viper, which is always super, you know, handy to have. The Martell one is in that DC deck. I think it was their best... I think it was actually Dave Gearhart's ad, but I think it was their best idea, because they're running a lot of prize. They're running, I think, two Harrenhal, two or three of the Desert Raider, and two or three of the Spy from Starfall. That's a fair amount of prize. You're getting to search the top five cards in Martell. Think of all the great stuff you can get in Martell when you can search the top five cards. Even if...
Oh, yeah. It's probably the one that I like the most as I think about them. And Martell has a lot of prized stuff that is worth, you know, firing off with it. Like
And Kahl. It's not like Kahl is a bad card. It was in the Canadian National winning deck. It's part of the major reason that that Heir to the Iron Throne deck finally works. King Danny standing for two power challenges, then an entry challenge, tends to be brutal. Or even just doing it with someone with renown. That's four that are at least useful.
Useful. Are they really worth the prize? I don't know. There's a certain level of neddliness to those titles being
I think prized, they have to be prized, because otherwise there's never a downside in running them. Like, I would run all four of those in every one of those decks. It would take up two slots. I'd run two of each if they weren't prized, if I didn't have to worry about Viserys. Because...
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to operate considerably differently. Since they all trigger off.
They
wouldn't have to. I guess that's assuming prize was eliminated from them entirely. That was a poor assumption.
Right. Well, they can still trigger themselves, and then when you play another off themselves, they can trigger off another prize card. Or even if they were all prized one, they'd be in every deck I make. Or every deck for the proper house I make. They're all very... Well, not the Wraithian. Yeah. The Wraithian and the Stark ones kind of suck. But the other ones are very powerful effects.
Well, okay, slight shift there while we're discussing, you know, the merits of prized and stuff. Obviously, we got a bunch of stuff that pushes it. What about, like, the punishing stuff? Did we need that, or was is the inherent punishment of prized enough on
it? I think it's a neat... Go ahead.
No, please.
I think it's a good place to start and could become a thing. I mean, back in the day, there was like a Force of Doomed mechanic that kind of beat you in. And we've seen Seizing the Prize do surprisingly well. It's a little more, it's more popular than I thought it would be, for sure. So I think that should exist and opens up some places to explore, for sure.
I don't think there's that much stuff that punishes prize besides Seizing the Prize.
Well, I mean, there's Doran, there's
and
Easing,
the Boneway. But please play the Boneway to punish my prize. I urge you all.
Yeah, to a lesser extent, kind of the Bastard.
What just happened?
It seems like maybe Martell's really the only house that directly.
Well, and Martell also has so many benefits for playing prized cards, like. Martell and Braithian specifically get bonuses for their prize stuff. Because Braithian gets, they get that Renly, they get that Robert, they get all sorts of good stuff. Well, I'm going to ramble about decks for 2 minutes then, since we have time. We also got a bunch of new Tier 1 decks this cycle, which is really nice. We got all the Conquest stuff. We got the Martell Conquest Tabara, which was everywhere, the Martathian. Braithian Conquest Dark just won Australia. It's using Rivers and Brand. Fantastic deck. Braithian to Lannister remains good, and Lannister to Martell is good. Corey's agenda, once again, is perfectly balanced. It seems Dark Wings, Dark Words. Doesn't have a lot of answers, but in an aggro-heavy meta, it can run with everything. Whatever variety of Stark Wings, Braithian Wings was third at Gen Con, and Corey's favorite isn't even either of those. It's Lannister Wings. And
yeah. Oh, I think Lannister Wings is sweet.
I haven't really messed with it. I feel like there must be a good Martell one too.
Very possibly. Part of what I think gives Lanny the nod for me is there's so much flexibility in any phase control events from them that really lets them be a bit more flexible with how they use that stuff versus some more specific things. For many of the other houses.
Braithian and Stark do a fair amount of recursion and event searching with theirs. So that's why those two have been so successful. Braithian just keeps getting stuff back. And Stark uses Edmure to get back its events and Lewin to search its events.
Yeah. I think overall, I have to agree with you. You know, it's kind of funny, judging by some of the discussion lately prompted by you know, the talks of whatever card pool solution is coming later. But it feels to me that this cycle not only gave us several fairly new deck types at the top end of the curve, but also didn't just completely obsolete other stuff, you know? Obviously, it's a living, changing game, and as we've had FAQs and more packs, things have cycled out. But over the lifespan of this cycle, we've seen the new stuff you mentioned, but we've seen older stuff, like Quentin just do well.
Power Behind the Throne.
And win Gen Con.
Power Behind the Throne.
What's that? We saw Power Behind the Throne. We saw whatchamacallit, we saw some winter stuff for a while.
Rageway Sales.
Like
Stark No Agenda, just Stark simple winter stuff.
Yeah, so we haven't, like, completely left behind these older things with power creep either. Like, it's
what we did
really
leave behind
diverse.
Is all sorts of Hollow Hill. When's the last time you played against a really good Hollow Hill deck?
Mark was experimenting with one in the weeks leading up to Gen Con down here, but I don't know if I would, you know, where I would rank it. It'd been a while, definitely, since I'd seen one.
I don't. I mean, the Martell one can't afford to have its
other
right.
than my Braithian.
Other than your Braithian, indeed. The Martell one can't survive having its key events canceled by Harrenhal, and the Targaryen one just had a bit too much restricted, and then they finally managed to kill your Braithian one. It took them like a couple extra facts, but it's gone. Or do you still have one that works?
I'm not sure I have one that works. I've got ideas to fiddle with some different stuff. I can either try some really off-the-wall stuff to keep a similar feel or go for a completely different Baratheon Knights of Hollow Hill deck that is an entirely different point to a deck that just happens to use the same house agenda. So, we'll see.
For me, I think the deck could possibly work with a bunch of character stealing and a bunch of knights.
Right. That's probably the direction it would go, but it would be a different deck that just happened to use the same house.
Agreed, holy. And we got a new HOD LIV 2 deck. And then there's like 18 other HODs that are solid, but haven't really been tested, like Ironwind, Ten Towers, Mandarin, the Wall, and the...
Yep. And, you know, speaking of House of Dreams, we saw Tunnels show well for a while over the course of the cycle.
I still like Tunnels. I'm basically done with House of Dreams personally, just because I don't like the tempo play of it right now, just because I played so much Dragon Pit. But Tunnels is still a tier 1 deck. It's still fantastic. And best of all, Heir to the Iron Throne finally works. Kahl, Dany, yep, Fire Maid Flesh, and Sir Aerys make that a monster. King Aerys, excuse me. Mm-hmm.
The Mad King Aerys? Yeah.
I'm so used to writing Sir Aerys, but, you know. But there's also that, plus kill somebody, Khal Drogo, Sir Barristan, all sorts of amazing, amazing stuff that works the triggers off everything.
Yeah, it was really interesting seeing that deck suddenly get pushed way up there.
It's still really hard to beat, too. Like, I don't know how much people are testing it anymore. I don't know how much people are playing with it. But it's so much more resilient than it seems like it should be. And whatchamacallit? Negotiations is the absolute perfect restricted, because just when you think you're safe and you've Villard and you're going to turn the game around, they crap out 5 more characters and you're just like, well, shit. Fantastic deck.
Well, you know, at the opposite end of the spectrum, I think what I kind of wanted to wrap the cycle retrospective with, though, is what stuff did we get that just didn't really work? I've got one at the top of that list for me right now. I've got a few ideas, but I think the top for me is probably Defiance. Obviously, half the cycle was named for it. It came out in the first pack, so we've had ample time to fiddle with it. We even had Bruno on this show 1 week to try and brainstorm and build a deck utilizing it. But it just has not really gained any traction.
I want to like Defiance, but it's not what it needs to be. Like that, you know what's weird? I'd actually run it over No Agenda in some cases, but that prize for each plot actually really does add up fast.
It really does.
The game's too fast right now for it. If, like, rotation or whatever comes in November slows the game down a bunch, I could see this getting more traction. But the game has, with power creep, which is going to happen, just gets faster and faster and faster and faster. It just is not a card for the current environment, that's for sure.
What else hasn't worked out for you, Will?
Well, you know, I'm also thinking that the task blocks that we just got aren't really going to quite work out either. You know, that 3-5-1 are reasonable enough stats in a vacuum, if not great. But the effects just feel clunky mechanically, reading all that text and, okay, wait, I'm playing this house, which lets me get this one unless I'm like this. And it's not super easy to just grok at a glance because of the way the text is written. And I almost feel like it would have been better to just print one plot, even at, say, the same stats, that said, search your deck for a card that doesn't match your house card or something along those lines. And that would have put it in that same sort of vein as Conquest. Like, here's this tool, see what cool stuff you can do. But I feel like when you're already fighting that deck space and everything, that the task...
It needed heavier gold if it was going to be what it is. At least for me.
Yeah.
And a lot of the house pairings were natural. I get that they're trying to push that, but it just didn't feel right.
Yeah, some of them just felt weird. Like we talked about when we reviewed him with the Targ Greyjoy stuff, it just feels awkward when you give us these bannermen that match up between two houses, but our search doesn't let us get either one depending on which house we have. It only lets us run one direction around the circle, which, I don't know, just doesn't seem to fit as well with the other things they've given us this set.
One of my big complaints is 3-cost prize 2 allies. They just shouldn't exist, unless they're bonkers good, and they haven't been.
Yeah. Especially the non-unique ones. If it was a unique, bonkers good ally, I don't know, say a Varus or something. Like,
even prize 2, just if you're going to cost 3, just knock the ally off. Like, the penalty is there. You don't need to double up on the ways. And ally hate is very prominent right now.
Oh, yeah, since we just got the Fuji's back.
Aerys is still everywhere. Varus destroyed me at Gen Con. This
Really? Man, I almost took Varus out of a deck lately because in testing I had it in my opening hand every game against Greyjoy.
That sucks.
And turns out Greyjoy doesn't have any mana. And even
at least shuts down the
Volts. Yeah, you can leave him in shadows for that, which is really all I got out of the deal.
He's super popular. I think he's great. One of the neatest things we did, and it's hard to do this with the Annals for obvious reasons, but I remember last year, it was either prepping for Gen Con or prepping for Worlds, Ben Terpstra built probably 8 or 9, maybe 10 different decks that were all regional winners or had placed really well, so we had things to test against on top of just seeing and playing with these top-tier decks. And he's like, you'd be amazed the cards that are in that find their way into all of them. He's like, Carrion Birds at the time were in all of them. Varus was in all of them. He's like, there were cards that just across the board you saw being included, and I think he's one of them that people really should not forget about. The stats are great, the cost is great. If you have to leave him in shadows, you can. But getting to pop an ally for free and having this nice dude out there, especially with the aftermath, I think he is someone you should not forget when deck building. Why we're talking about a card that has not in the cycle, I do not know, but...
Because they keep making prize two allies.
Exactly. So.
And Dissension's back. I've seen a lot of Dissension.
Oh. And Eris never goes anywhere. Finally seeing less Jorah, though, at least. Well, because the new Jorah is so good for tunnels. Not for tunnels, for a dragon pit.
Yeah. That's a good point. Well, Kyle, is there anything that didn't really work for you?
Roin Pullman for Targ Black Sails, that just fizzled.
Hey, damn Targ it. Black Sails was third in DC.
Well, I was in DC, and I did not take it to third. So for me, it did not work.
Something. I did think it would push it to a bit more prominence.
I mean, it's a really solid card. I mean, you always have to worry about it. And it's like, hey, would I like to overcommit on defense for these challenges? No? Cool, I'll just win. It's good. There's stuff. I mean, like you said, prized is so insanely hard to balance from a design standpoint, from a playtesting standpoint. Things that you think are going to be awesome aren't. Things that you think are balanced turn out to be exploitable. I mean, prize just, it's a double-edged sword. It lends itself to opening up all kinds of design options, but in turn, that's all kinds of stuff you have to playtest with. It's just so hard to make to hit it on the spot. I mean, some are high, some are low, but that's going to happen regardless of any mechanic. So, I mean, you have to remember that the Guild Hall was not a limited response when it came out. I mean, to think that, I mean, just Alchemist Guild Hall was ridiculous. And Shadows as a whole wasn't played a ton, and then Greg took it to Wisconsin or some shit and just locked shit down with Lanny Shadows, and we're like, whoa, Shadows! So, I mean, cards are all over the place. So,
even this second, remember how good we thought Tytron Astaris was?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, huh? He's not seeing a lot of play, no.
Like, no, it's interesting. The cards you think are going to sell, balance is really hard. And so I think prize, because it's an easy thing for a casual observer to assess on, yes, this is right, yes, this is too low, yes, it's too high. You can look at a card, assess it in play, and judge if it's worth it or not really quickly. I think the cycle is getting a little more, people are a little more critical of it from a balancing standpoint. But I think if you compare it to other cycles, it falls fairly in line with hit and missing on power levels on cards. It's just it's easier to do it with this cycle than most.
I just think there's more power cards in this cycle. Like, I feel like the top 5 cards in this cycle are better than the top 5 cards of any cycle, at least in the past couple of years.
I don't know. The King's Road cycle had some pretty good stuff in it, too.
Maybe. I'm taking a quick flip through. I don't see anything on that power level, really.
There are a lot of impactful cards for sure, but again, I think that there's something going on behind the scenes. I mean, rotation is coming. You know these cards are going to be legal for sure. These are going to maybe become the new marquee cards that we build around.
You know, speaking of marquees, I really feel like Kyle needs a t-shirt to wear to Worlds that says rotation is coming, because I think that's his new catchphrase. I've heard it probably a half a dozen times every
year since that announcement. You can't not think about it when talking about card design. Or, cards, you cannot live in...
I mean, if we know. We don't know what rotation is yet. We don't know if rotation is the answer.
I think his marquee should be, yes, I am doing the goddamn dishes.
Yeah. Probably
significantly better.
Be.
Looking to the last set, you know who we don't see much of anymore? I mean, he's still around, but not often. Cold Hands.
Yeah, I think Harrenhal had a little bit of a hand in that. You know, if you're planning on knocking out my Cersei or whatever, I'm willing to kill a moneylender or, heck, even a Janos or something, depending on the situation, so...
I mean, yeah, he was everywhere for a while, and I guess Harrenhal also makes Uber character builds less safe, so Cold Hands is less necessary. Because if your Velar is going to clear the board anyway, you don't necessarily need Cold Hands anymore.
That's also valid. You know, thinking of Valor, though, that does lead me to one of the other things that I feel didn't quite work, and that was Counterplot. And part of that has to do with Prized, I think. You know, of course, we definitely thought it was going to be pretty awesome based on...
We didn't, you guys did.
...performance. Yeah, fair enough. We, me, I was the only one of us playing in the CCG when Counterplot was around. And it's just interesting seeing the fine line and tweaks with Wheels and Counterplot were both available in the CCG at the same time, and now we have them available again in the LCG, and I really feel like it comes down to that prized value right now. You flip those prized values...
Well, one of those ended up banned, too. So even they both ended up banned, I didn't realize.
Both ended up banned.
Counterplot was banned. So when Counterplot first came out, I won a couple games because of it. Like, it ended up, if you can time it right, it's another good player tax card. But it's also, unlike Wheels, that extra prized really does matter a lot more late in the game.
Right. Which often is when you really want to seal the deal with whatever that plot is.
Like, you'd really like to stop that Velar, but that's because they could, they're getting close to closing and you don't, you know? It just becomes a bit too much. It's not as useful late game as Wheels.
Right. You know, I don't know if you guys have anything else in particular.
Go for it.
But I do have two other cards. Okay. The next one is another Lannister card. This might surprise some folks that I'm bothering to mention it. It's Frey Armsman. We got him early in the set, and he set us up so it would look like, hey, we were going to get this little Frey, like, sub-theme running through the set, where these, you know, different Freys would get abilities that keyed off of there being more of them, and we'd have some kind of Lanny Swarm deck of one kind or another. And then we got, what, one Bannerman that can't even participate with that
Armsman,
if I remember right? No, they can both do the military.
So.
Yeah. But it just wasn't there the way it looked like it was going to set us up to be, so it just felt like a... Like an expectation.
FFG does that shit all the time, though. Like, we're still waiting for the end of the Rainbow Guard. They're like, we're going to make Clansmen semi-competitive and then release a bunch of stuff at random here and there. Like, how long was it before Sandstink started to get fleshed out? Are they even really there? Like, there's a lot of stuff that FFG starts to set up and then, like, seemingly forgets about for years on end.
How long did it take for Captain to become relevant?
Yeah, really.
Exactly.
An infinite amount of time. You know what else still isn't relevant?
It's close.
I mean, not in the general, like, Greyjoy, mill here and there kind of route. And Ten Towers, I still...
Dude,
don't
I
think
don't
know. Get there.
That's a bold...
Keep in mind, though, it's just the amount that you won the challenge by, and you have to kneel it to do it. If it just did it, like, passively every challenge... I would 100% say $10.
Once again, the challenge for Greg is Greyjoy Mill for Worlds, however he does it.
Yeah. There we go. I'll see if... let's see. I think he'll be coming to Card Night this week, if I remember right. I think it's his No Kids week, so maybe I'll bug him to try.
I think it's real. I think it's real right now. I think it's very difficult to build. I think it's even more difficult to play, but I believe it is there. I believe a mill build currently exists, and someone's going, it is, I have it in my basement, but
Actually,
I think Will is underestimating mill.
Listeners, sound off if you want Greg to build that on the cast.
Ooh, on the cast? Yeah. I think that'd be a great
crazy episode. Jank from Greg to the listeners.
See, that's what he does. He shows up half-cocked, yeah, a little drunk, and just builds weird shit, and then leaves again.
Well, that then wins worlds.
Yeah. So I got this idea, blah, 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 and just leaves, and then we see worlds win it. It's like, oh, cool.
Your last card, Will?
Oh.
That was actually...
Look at that.
That was 10 towers.
That's a good card.
Yeah. Well, any parting thoughts on the cycle, or...
I'll buy a beer for anyone who can mill me. I don't even care if they win. If they just mill me.
And he'll play Black Sails, too.
I don't know if I'll go that far. Maybe not at Worlds. Maybe I'll keep a deck with me and just be like, hey, if you can mill this, there's a beer.
Nice. Mill is actually... You know where mill works really well? Mill works in draft.
It does. It definitely does. The smaller deck size and the pseudo-Highlander format... that it becomes, at least as far as bomb cards are concerned, means the mill really counts.
So,
and no one works recursion in. I mean, when was the last time you saw recursion in a draft deck?
Are there even recursion?
There's not a lot for to use.
Didn't say it was a conscious decision.
I think that sounds like props.
I agree.
I too agree.
We agree a lot. I'm going to slop us getting along so well.
I miss the angst, the preparing for war, swill a beer before an episode.
It's all right. In a couple weeks, I'm off on a Friday. That doesn't help. I'm off on a Wednesday, and we'll record on a Tuesday. I'll get nice and hammered and argue with everybody.
Just for the sake of doing it?
Won't make a lick of sense, but he'll...
I'm good at that.
Just to do it. We'll see how many ridiculous things we can get Aaron to say.
Oh, that's going to be a bad episode.
That's going to be when we bring Daryl back. Welcome back, Daryl. Here's a drunk Aaron to fuck with.
Well, we just get drunk.
And Daryl can't handle his booze. That's what I'm learning.
No. Yeah, it wouldn't take much.
So we're propping things? I feel like I should. I lost some Blood Bowl an hour and a half ago. That sucked. Yeah, that is most certainly a slop. To a fucking human team. Like, those are the worst. Because there's humans. I play with dwarves, but I couldn't drink because we're at the store. That part made me sad. When I play with Clue, we play at his house so we can drink while we do it. And Blood Bowl is way better when you can have a beer.
Most games are.
Yes, that's true. Other props. Nope. Moving on. I lied, and I would be totally remiss if I did this. I got our first wedding gift delivered to our apartment today, and it's from Kyle, the original Kyle version 1.0, and it is the letter opener, but it's shaped like ice, the sword.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, and it's really badass. Like, I mean, it looks just like it. The handle's, like, carved wood. I mean, it looks legit, like just a tiny, tiny version of ice. But he sent, like, a note, like, don't be, like, cutting off heads with this unless it's letter heads. Ha ha ha. I mean, a normal Kyle Sissitsky pun.
Yeah. God, his whole Facebook, all puns.
Right.
All puns. All the time. Good time. If you ever need, like, to brighten your day, just go read Kyle's wall. But no, it's super awesome, and I feel like this is the one place where people will truly appreciate how cool it is to have ice. Is what we're gonna, and we're gonna get a ton of cards for this stupid wedding, so being able to hack all those open with ice is pretty badass.
I wanna.
There's gonna be a lot.
I still got my arrows ready.
Weddings, I can tell.
Oh boy, Aaron's just gonna show up with a crossbow and just sit in the balcony.
Yep.
Shoot. Cool. Hey, if I can pick them, you can do it. I have some family members that need to go.
Deal. Consider it done. And then you can keep the crossbow.
Hey! That's a memento. That'll go on the wall next to the dragonbone dagger.
Perfect. Have you guys ever played a game called Libertalia? It's a little board game where you're a pirate, and you and however many opponents each get the same deck, and you're basically competing for booty over a week-long period. It's pretty fun. It's not wonderful, but it's got a lot of replayability, and it's a really good game. So I wanted to prop that.
Sounds like my freshman year of college.
Fighting for booty?
Fighting for booty. It's got the same.
Well, I'll have to check it out. I do have a weakness
for that. And also, Cash and Guns is the most fun game in the world.
I have heard of that one. Everyone who plays it loves it.
Yeah, we played it at Gen Con. Basically, you're competing for loot after a heist, and you and everyone has guns, and you get to point it at each other, and it's a whole game of bluffing. It's fantastic. It's everything Melee should be. Like, if you can find it, get it. You guys are by Mark. Make Mark get it for you.
Yeah.
If you can get at least four or five people, you will have a blast, especially if you're drunk. So, awesome. It's my birthday present for my wife, because I won't shut up about it.
There you go. Yeah, anytime gifts for significant others is a game, you are doing it right.
Oh, yeah. It was a game and booze.
Agreed.
I wonder if Will, when he re-listens to this, here's a prop for Will. Prop/slop to Will, if he can or cannot find where I referenced Kristen giving him a hand job in this episode.
Judging by how late we're having to record this episode due to scheduling and technical difficulties.
Yes, and then tell her about it, and she'll get mad at you. It'll be awesome.
I liked her. Can I prop her?
It'll be lovely.
She was really nice.
There you go.
So definitely props to her.
I think
she was really cool, and it's a shame that you sucked so bad I couldn't drink with you guys. But props to her.
Yeah. Don't blame me.
I can't blame Rings. He's a drinker.
You can't blame Rings.
He's like an unstoppable.
Who just turned 40. He just
propped
his birthday.
He just washed.
Props to Rings for his birthday. Happy 40th, man.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
He does not. He still parties like he's 20. It's awesome. Wow, guys. I know it's out of order, but can I prop the fact that I just drove 90 miles an hour for 40 minutes? No cops busted me. That was awesome.
Wow, that's impressive.
I am home from Iowa City. If anyone wants to Google Map that shit, in 42 minutes.
Well, where do you live?
So Davenport. 18. I went from Critical Hit Games in Iowa City to, all right, from when the call happened, so say 50 minutes from Critical Hit Games to 1805 Winding Hill Road, Davenport, Iowa.
All right, listeners, Google Maps, tell us how long that should take.
There you go. Everybody can also stalk Kyle now.
Ah, shit. Don't send me, like, sex toys or poo. Don't do that.
Everything else is fair game.
Yeah. Everything else I can deal with, but poo, sex toys, it's weird. My mailman's going to be very concerned.
Guys, I now challenge you to find weird shit to send him that's not sex toys or poo that's going to freak him out.
Apartment 507. Otherwise, you're sending it to the apartment complex, and that would...
Which might be better.
So much worse.
Just address it. Just address it to 2 Champs, 1 Chump at the apartment complex.
Wow. Wow.
All right, please don't do that, because I see this getting...
Then off the slob, Kyle getting evicted for some kind of harassment.
So I've got a maybe slops to work, because I love my job, but there's some awesome, like, film course that's going to be an arts course that my school is offering, an IB course, but there's a training for it, and they're like, the training's in Miami, you want to go? And I'm like, yes. So, like, everyone said they want to go, but they asked me first, so I'm reasonably high up the list for it. But it's in November, and I'm terrified that they're just going to be like, oh, by the way, want to go during Worlds Weekend? And I'm going to cry.
Aww.
So I don't know if it's happening, but I'm literally, like, worrying about it, trying to, like, Google dates and figure things out. And wish they said November before I said yes.
Yeah.
I have to keep all of November free.
Well, because you got play testing leading up to it. I mean, you can't just jump in cold turkey.
Sure, I can. I don't mind people handing me a deck sometimes.
Yeah, I worry about... Like, luckily, because we've been so busy, me and Danny have booked, I mean, absolutely nothing from Wedding to Worlds is just dead space for us to not do anything organized. So I'm like, at some point in there, I'm going to need the motivation to play cards. So this is going to be my one lone obligation, is talking to you guys. So
I've
need to find a way to make that productive.
Britt, do you guys meet Britt at Gen Con
of the podcast
from Boston? Well, Britt and Lauren Fitch are having a pig roast like next weekend. So super props, I'm going up for that. And then like 3 weeks after that is Thrumstoberfest down in D.C., which I'm pretty sure.
So, yeah, I saw that. In
that'll
I
be
wish
my,
the
that's all
I wish the methods were more dense over here, so you could all just travel to one another. But here, we're the only people that travels. Slop to Will, having never fucking dragged his ass up to Iowa.
I am definitely coming up for your wedding tournament. I confirmed that.
That does not count.
That's brilliant.
I mean, it kind of counts.
You have a wedding tournament? That's the best idea I've ever heard.
Yeah, the Friday before, or I guess like the day before, that night, we're throwing a tournament. Like, in all the invites for Thrones players is a little photoshopped version of the red wedding card. It's got like details and our wedding dates, the stats and stuff. But it is, and
oh, yeah. It's really cool.
The highest placing male and female will drink on us at the reception.
That's pretty awesome.
Oh. I didn't realize that
yeah.
There was that kind of prize
well,
on there.
Since your girlfriend's better than you at Thrones, Will.
That's awesome.
You've got a good shot. You've got a good shot.
Exactly.
I think so far we actually have an equal number of females and males participating. So I kind of figured we'd have like four females duking it out, but I think the number may get a little higher. Our hope is if the numbers stay manageable that we can wait till after the rehearsal to start it, and then like me and Danny and like obviously there's a couple people involved that play cards and they would like to play, so we may work some stuff in. But yeah, it should be a good time. We have the whole reception hall open, so
cool.
People will drink and be merry, and I figure a lot of Thronesers are so scattered that they'll be coming in Friday anyways, so I was like, why not just, they're going to try and find a place to drink and play cards anyways, might as well make it easy on them.
And yeah. Since I propped Will's girlfriend, and I didn't meet your girlfriend, Kyle, I want to prop your friend who was there, whose name I didn't learn. She was really cool, too.
Pink hair?
Yes. Maybe? Sure.
Yeah, that would be Beth. She is my new prodigy.
Probably.
I finally have someone I can, like, teach Thrones, and she is kind of taking it by the storm, so that's really good. We're hoping to get her to a couple of store championships next season, try and break her in. But
I just want to throw out one quick prop to the Game of Thrones TV show. It's kind of a combined prop because we had some great news this week. Number one, Bran's not going to be in season 5 at all, which one is great because I really don't care for him much. And two, I don't know what the heck they would have done with him anyway because he was already where he would be at the end of book 5. And next, we do get Cersei's Walk of Shame.
Today's! So,
hooray.
We have not seen Cersei naked yet. Just that horrible sex scene from season 1 that was atrocious.
Well, she's naked in 300, isn't she?
I don't think so. I don't remember that.
No, maybe you don't. The movie's not, that does not hold up well.
Yeah. But yeah, I remember just watching season 1, I'm like, this sex scene is terrible, her and Jamie up in the tower, and then they got so much better. And I was like, oh, thank God. But at the same time, I was like, then why did that have to be so shitty? But hey, we're remedying that, getting our moment. I have one other prop, and I think that's going to be Danger Zone! Daryl, come back. It's the goal.